Hey, Saucy But Sweet fam. We are back, and this week we are definitely in for a treat. My day ones know that one of my favorite conversations to have is about love, what we're doing right in love, what we're doing wrong in love, making love, and the different ways people love. Valentine's Day has come and gone, and to be completely honest, for many years I used to resent Valentine's Day. But as I've gotten older, I've learned that it's actually a beautiful day and can be spent with anyone you love. Yes, that includes yourself. It's a day to focus not on who you don't have, but who you do have. Some of the best advice I ever received was from a fellow Buddhist and someone I consider a friend. She's this week's guest and a remarkable writer. She told me that I am my own primary partner. Now, if you're anything like me and grew up watching movies like Cinderella, or really any Disney film or romantic comedy, the idea of being your own primary partner feels foreign. And we receive bonus points and worthiness if we find someone who wants to spend the rest of their lives with us. What I love about this advice is it gives us autonomy of our own lives and allows us to feel whole no matter who we decide to spend the rest of our lives with, and allows us to feel free if we decide that we actually prefer to be alone. So if you're like me and intrigued by women living their lives on their own terms, stay with us. You are now listening to Saucy But Sweet with Allie McPherson, a podcast where nothing is off limits, where we talk about everything from romance, sex, pop culture, and everything in between. Sit back, relax, and enjoy an unfiltered time where we keep it sweet and always saucy. I am so excited to have Ketora Kendrick joining us.
Hey, Ketora. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Welcome. You are a new friend to the podcast. Can you introduce yourself to those who don't know you?
I would love to. First of all, thank you for having me. I am super, super psyched and humbled, actually, to be included in this conversation. So I call myself Ketora Kendrick, the ambassador of freedom.
Okay.
I write for and about the free Black woman. And one of the things that I deeply, deeply value are Black women. And I am deeply committed to encouraging each and every one of us, no matter what age we are, to commit to ourselves and to choose ourselves and to live a life that is tailor fit to the person we believe ourselves to be. So yeah, I'm a writer, I'm a traveler, I'm a speaker, I'm a general lover of life.
Yes, one of the best intros of this podcast so far. So thank you. Thank you for that. Yes, and so, you know, we're at the beginning of the year. This episode's going to be coming out a little bit later, but, we're in January 2nd, so we just started the year. How are you finding it so far? Like, what are your goals for this year? I know it just started, but what are some things you're really looking forward to?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, I'm excited. Last year, 2022, I reached several huge determinations, both personally, professionally, spiritually. And 2023 will be a continuation of those goals. I determined to strengthen my connections with the people in my life, especially my family, who, like most Southern families, is slightly unhinged. So I'm going to continue that connection and getting over my own ego and self-righteousness to connect further with my people. Professionally, I want to end this year with a book deal that will bleed into or set me up for a film option or a limited series option. So for my second book, I'm in conversation now with, I've been in conversation all too often that fell apart. I'm in conversation now with some publishers for my next book. And spiritually, I want to be able to support, I'm a practicing Buddhist, so I want to be able to support the young women in my practice. And also to sort of develop a greater sense of strength in my faith and my spiritual practice. So I think that's pretty much it. That's all I'm going to do this year. I'm going to keep it simple.
I love that. No, I love that. That's really encouraging because, you know, I'm Buddhist.
Yes.
Hey, everybody. Yes. The Buddhist community, if you're listening. Woo.
Sister in faith. Woo.
Yes. Sister in faith. for me, the biggest thing of this year that I'm really, I've been planning on a lot last year, which I told you about, is my business, my food and beverage business. And so looking to launch this year.
Yeah.
Yes. So yes, there are challenges. There's many challenges in being a Black woman entrepreneur, but like you, I'm keeping the faith and I know it's going to happen. There's no, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. I'm going to be the first person to purchase. I'm ready. I'm looking for it. I'm waiting.
Yes. Yes. And listeners will be the first ones to know when the website's up, when we're where we're going to be, all that stuff. And that's 2023 for me. We're really starting it out with positive thoughts only, right? Only positivity.
Yep. Yep. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
So I just want to start off by saying your book, No Thanks, Black Female and Living in the Martyr-Free Zone, is amazing. It's something that I know I'm going to just breeze through. From the very first page, I was completely hooked. I love your prose, your sarcasm, your candor. Oh, it's just so great. So I want to know, like, writing a book like this, like, what made you want to write this specifically for Black women who don't conform to society standards? You know, that they're not alone, that there's more to them than having children and being married. Because that's something that's really obviously true, but hard for a lot of women to figure out, a lot of people to figure out. So what made you want to write this?
Oddly enough, what you just said is why I wanted to write it, because I do think when you are a woman, especially a woman who wears black skin, the world and the macrocosm of society, the world, and the microcosm of your mama, your siblings, your aunties, your people, your family, and your friends, they create a box for you.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the box is created so subtly and so completely that you don't even see it. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you crawl into that box. Some women find themselves comfortable in that box. They don't care that there's a box that has been created. Some of them said, I'm glad this box is created for me, so I don't have to do too much to figure it out. But there are others who are in that box, and before they can question it, challenge it, and decide to get into it, they're stuck in there. And I don't know how it happened. I've had many people ask me, especially in reference to No Thanks, and when I've talked about this book over the last few years, I've had many people ask me and actually be quite awed that for some reason, I spent my youth clearly aware of that box and rejecting it at every opportunity I got. And whereas a lot of women, when they reach their 40s, especially black women, when they reach their 40s, they start to see the box and start unraveling it. I just knew immediately there were certain things that didn't appeal to me. Mm. Certain things that I knew didn't fit who I was going to be as an adult. But because I grew up in the Bible Belt South as a little black girl with two lower middle class parents who was raised as a strict Seventh-day Adventist, my saying these things don't appeal to me felt like heresy. Mm. And I was doubly confused because people didn't want to admit that they were sort of, I was gaslit before I knew that was a word. So people didn't want to admit that there was a box that I was being too much by saying I was not going to get into the box that they said didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And then I had the nerve to constantly talk about this box and how we expect women to get into it. So I reached my, I'm 47 now. I reached my early 40s. Realizing that my entire life has been unusual because I did not want the things that the world believes women must have to be contented, to have a contented, joyful life. Mm-hmm. One is marriage, especially if you are a straight girl. The world will tell you that there is no other thing you should spend the rest of your life looking for except for romantic love. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nice if you have your little job, if you accomplish your little goals, if you have your little friends, if you have your, you know, your family. That's cool. But the world will try to tell straight women, especially straight black women who prefer to date black men, especially, that there can be no other thing that they should be prioritizing, especially in their youth, than trying to get chose by a good black man. The world also tells women that there is no other way to know love. There is no other way to become a full, responsible, functioning woman if you do not give birth to and raise a child. I knew that was bullshit when I was 16, even though I didn't have the language to say that. And I found myself in my 40s having spent, quite literally, Allie, the most of my adulthood waiting to regret kicking that box aside. waiting to wake up one morning and say, oh, why didn't I stay with so-and-so? Why didn't I work harder to date? Oh, Lord, I ain't got no husband. I kept waiting to be kept up at night by the sounds of my shriveling ovaries not producing children. I'm on a cusp of 50. Shit ain't never happened. I'm still waiting for it to happen. So I wrote it because I wanted documentation. I wanted documentation that what I knew when I was your age and younger was true. I was right. There are women for whom those things are important. But I knew that that life, I didn't need that, nor did I really want it, and that I could still live a joyful, completely fulfilling life where I am happy more often than I am not. Because I don't think when I was younger, I saw any representation of the woman I am now as a choice, not an unfortunate circumstance, a choice that resulted in the woman being absolutely happy with her life. So I wanted documentation of that because I think women, young women, are encouraged to be, to spend their youth in this anxious pursuit of shit that they don't really need.
I know that's right.
That they could be devoting to the development of themselves in many other ways. Yeah. So that's essentially why I wrote it, because as you said, when you asked me this question, you don't see it too often, but there are many women who are living the life I'm living and have absolutely no regrets.
Yeah, I love that. What I think the problem is too, is I think a lot of women might feel that, but then they're seeing movies and shows that show the working woman, the woman who has this, the woman who's that, but like, finally, when she meets the man of her dreams, now everything comes together. There's not one movie I saw that doesn't have that plot.
Of course.
And I do want your book to turn into a show or a movie because we need to see this. Like, I really hope that you get that because I'm like, I want to see that story that you're talking about, that your life. I really do.
I do. And I want to see the story where singlehood is not some damn journey.
Yes.
Where it isn't always this pursuit to unsingle yourself. Again, for those who truly feel like partnership, especially legal partnership with the kids, is in their destiny, I salute you. Invite me to your wedding, all of that good stuff. But I really want to see what is a more realistic reflection, to be quite honest. Even for the women I know who have gotten married, they were like, I'm committed to making this work. But when it don't, I will go down to the courthouse and sign another document. It'll be fine, you know? So this idea that this should be, like, the centering of romantic partnership and the accoutrement that comes with it, that the then having the kids and having the house. Well, first of all, the shit relies heavily on the labor of women. So I don't see why none of this is presented as a prize to begin with. Like, I've watched marriages from afar. And I mean, I don't want to speak for people, but I'm clear. Michelle Obama's, I hated y'all's president for 10 years because he left me to be a single married mother. That shocked the world and everybody that don't shock me. I know women whose husbands are not senators. They're the manager of Walmart. And the same dynamic is happening. So I think we should reflect the reality that in 2022, the thought of women somehow, the center always being, how can I acquire this romantic relationship as a way of showing that I am valued, that I am worthy, that I am finally officially one who's chosen. How we can decenter that and show what it means to be a woman who is unmarried, who has a full life. And sometimes it involves dating men, sometimes it doesn't, that there's more to her life than this constant anguish, anxiety about looking for the one. Because when you get the one, many of you will become Michelle Obama. That's just the truth of it. Whether or not you make peace with it or not. Many of you, if you are a heterosexual woman, you will become Michelle Obama in your marriage. The world is set up to make you become her.
No, for sure, for sure. Now, in the book, you make it clear that you spent much of your life having to defend your choices to not be married and have children, which, you know, I can't imagine having to do that every time you say something. Someone's like, but why? Like, what's wrong? You know, was there a lot of backlash from readers or people who didn't even read your book, who just heard the title and were like, huh? Like, How dare a black woman have the audacity to write something so anti-patriarchal? The absolute nerve, you know? The nerve of you to do that. what was the, you know, what did you hear back from people regarding this?
The vast majority of the response to No Thanks has been from women who, again, like you, have longed to see this story told, and who saw that a lot of what is presented in dominant culture is not just by accident. It is in order to convince women that they made a mistake back in 1975 when they chose their freedom.
Mm.
So the vast majority of it has been from women, those who are unmarried and child-free by choice, and those who chose the more conventional route, saying this needs to exist. And some, especially some who've chosen the conventional route, actually saying, quite honestly, had I had your book when I was younger, my life would be different now. And it may not have involved marriage and motherhood.
Wow.
I think, and that's the complex nuances of adulthood. Women being able to say, oddly enough, what I was told often would happen to me, you're going to regret making this choice. Women who made the choice that I said I was supposed to regret, who are saying, quite honestly, I'm not going to use the word regret, miss. But I do know now, had I read this book when I was younger, I may not have chosen to take this route. And if I had chosen, I would have required certain things and would have asked very specific questions, right?
Mm.
So that has been the large majority of the response to it. I have gotten passive aggressive commentary, mostly on social media, not necessarily to my face. Like, if you're gonna come out to my book event, clearly you support it, because why are you getting in your car driving to this bookstore if you hate what I'm writing about? So I've gotten passive aggressive comments and DMs and social media platforms from, oddly enough, women who this is my own personal take on it, women who are deeply offended that I have the audacity not to worship the choice that they made. The reason why a lot of women still choose this when they don't have to, and deal with, again, Michelle Obama, who said, I'm just going to stop asking Barack to help. I'm going to just exploit the labor of these other women in my life, like he's exploiting my labor, to get our children's needs met. I'll exploit my mama labor. I'll exploit my friend's labor, because he's busy living his best political life, right? So a lot of what comes with this is you still get this air of, again, you were chosen. You are a proper woman. Everybody sort of, every woman, because, you know, you look at all of the back and forth and the dating wars of how much dating sucks and the apps suck and it's horrible, all these trash men and men giving their own version of it. So you like resting in, oh, I am the lucky one who doesn't have to deal with the dating. I am the lucky one who has this extra income. I am the lucky
yes.
one who gets these tax breaks.
Yes.
I am the lucky one who has kids
yes.
that, you know, people know I'm a real woman now. So when you are presented with a woman who says, well, I'm happy for you, but it don't make no difference to me.
Well, that makes them feel all types of mad.
It really gets them in their feelings. I'm not judging you for saying that, but all I'm saying is I don't see why I'm surprised. But I'm glad you do. All right, cool.
But I don't want to be you necessarily.
Exactly. I'm happy you happy being you, but I really don't see that as a prize. But I'm glad you got your prize. So when you have the audacity not to worship what they have acquired because they have gotten what a woman is rewarded with, which is labor.
Yes.
When they have gotten that, and you simply say, I want to question why it is presented as a prize. And I want to say, I'm questioning that because I've never seen it as a prize. And 50 years later, I'm still not seeing it as a prize. And again, I'm not judging you. I'm glad that it's working for you, because life as an adult is complicated, period. There are days of my life as one income, living on one income and not having a consistent romantic presence. It's not necessarily easy. And I'm sure there are days in your married kids' life, married mother life, that, you know, there's difficulty. But all I'm saying is I'm simply questioning why this construct is supposed to be such a great joy for women, and how we are still sort of presenting this conditioning to women that your life should be spent, especially your youth. Your youth should be spent in anguished pursuit of this. Like, there are young women who could truly be devoting themselves to so many other meaningful relationships, so many other meaningful experiences that all contribute to a wonderful middle-aged life. But 50%, if not more, of their brain power is spent in anguish pursuit because this relationship didn't work out. Let me try it again. Let me try to make this work. Oh, Lord, I'm turning 30 and I still like all of that when you could have had all of that time doing so many other things that are meaningful that will set you up for a wonderful older life, whether they eventually involves a husband and kids or not.
I love that. No, that is true. And it actually speaks to my life and how I've been going through much of last year. And I talk about it in a lot of my episodes, really, about dating and being single. A lot of how I felt most of last year was, I need to be in pursuit.
No, you don't.
I need this. This is what I need because I'm going to be 30 in 3 years.
No, you don't. You don't need none of that shit.
Yeah. And like what I just told you about, the biggest goal really of this year is my business. Mm-hmm. That's something that should be taking up like 90% of my brain, right? Because that's something that's growing, not just for me, but if I have children, they, you know, it's something that can benefit my family, my business, can do a lot rather than just a romantic love.
There is another belief that the way to save Black families and build generational wealth is by marriage. That's only one way. The fastest growing segment of the Black middle class are single women. So we are chilling out here in the middle class strata quite nicely. And this idea that simply having another income automatically, so like it's a panacea for all of the ails that white supremacy and anti-Blackness creates is kind of ridiculously in of itself. Like if you're in love is a beautiful thing in all its forms, and even especially in the romantic form, it's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
But this notion that there could be no other way to cure loneliness, no other way to deal with generational wealth and creating wealth and coming out of poverty, no other way to have a healthy life than this one way, which is constant pursuit of romantic love. Yeah. And to add on that, the structural obstacles that exist as a Black woman for you to find the romantic love.
Oh, yeah.
So they got about 5 or 10 obstacles for me as a educated single Black woman to jump over to get this. And it don't immediately solve much of what racism and white supremacy creates anyway. But out of all the other ways I could be looking at to have a fulfilling life that don't have as many obstacles, I'm supposed to spend my youth, my good moisturized skin and thin waistline, I'm supposed to spend all that time in anguished pursuit of the most difficult, non-guaranteed way of solving all this shit that racism and structural inequality has created. Come on now, get the fuck out of here. That don't make no sense. That don't make no sense.
Instead of worrying about starting a business and putting all that energy to building yourself.
Starting a business, strengthening your friendships that will carry you through. I've had friendships that have lasted several boyfriends and one or two husbands.
Yes.
Strengthening your friendships, actually repairing the fucked up relationship with your mama instead of worrying about this dude. You could be spending that time really addressing why you and your mama don't get along. You could be strengthening ties with your siblings. So when your mama is too old to take care of herself, y'all have a sink in place, that you a good system in place to help her. You could be traveling. You could be taking pottery class. You could be figuring out why you got social anxiety and going to your therapist and working through that. All this shit you could be doing, but you mean to tell me we gonna spend all this time talking about how can we make dating better? Just don't do the shit if you don't want to. That's how you make it better. Don't do it. And then when you want to do it, do it.
That's what I do. I do that all the time. I come in, I'm like, I come out, I do it again, maybe. You know.
Exactly. Sometimes it sticks, sometimes it don't.
Exactly. And, you know, I talk a lot about sex, love, and dating on this show. And recently I had some guests talk about the messiness of dating over the last year, particularly two guests that you know, which is Ty Shepherd and Destiny Oglesby. We talk about really seeking real love in relationships, which is something that has been big on our 2022 list. And I recall the advice you gave me to be my own primary partner, which I thought was amazing. And something that I think a lot of young women are missing.
Most definitely.
You know, while they're on their dating scene, and I definitely was missing that. But then I also talk about the complexities of being dickmatized, pussymatized, for those who are, you know, into that, and being addicted to someone through love, which I suffer from as well. Like, what? Yes. Like, I love your advice, and I try to keep it in my head when I feel like, oh my God, this guy, this toxic love is like a drug. So many people deal with that, and it's really hard. And I'm just curious, is that something that you ever struggled with before you kind of got to this place?
I know this is going to sound obnoxious, but no. But I will say this.
Well, okay.
I will say this, and I mean, I'm not making up. I'm not being self-righteous. I really didn't struggle with that. I did struggle with being in love and really feeling someone intensely, and it wasn't reciprocated.
Yes.
But the way I handled it was I pined. I was like, oh, but we would be so perfect for each other. And I mean, I know I'm not crazy. I think I'm getting signals from him. But when they didn't resolve anything, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to fuck this other dude then. Because I guess I'm going to fuck him. Because I'm clear how you feel about me. And I'm sad that this other dude, but I never really got into now let me convince him, let me keep dealing with the inconsistency. I was just like, this is messed up and I'm sad, but they got other dudes who I can just be with. Who I got to figure this out with. So I understand the emotion under it. And I think, I hate to sound like, you know, an old auntie, like, oh, when I was your age. But I think a lot of it is youth. I think a lot of it is the tortured sort of drama of the 20s and yes. Being in love with the drama of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's real.
I would say that it is. I mean, it's real.
Over the last few months, I have been steadfast on going to nail salons and either getting extensions or just adding nail polish to my nails. We all know that can do so much damage to your nails. Not gonna lie, they are not in the best shape at the moment. If you're anything like me and love getting your nails done, but are on the lookout for products that will hydrate your nails and leave them looking and feeling the best they can be, then Sundays is the perfect nail care wellness brand for you. Each product is non-toxic and vegan. Not to mention, it will leave your nails feeling refreshed and ready to go. As you know, we're all out here trying to enjoy a hot girl or hot boy summer. So we need to make sure our nails are in tip-top shape. Clean beauty products are the best form of self-care. What are you waiting for? Log on to sundays.com and for a discount on your fave nail polishes, serums, and hydrating products, use the code ALIVENUE. That's ALIVENUE. Your nails will thank you later.
A lot of us, not just 20s, but a lot of women and men too, we put sex, I think, as the highest thing on the pedestal. And we tend to think, well, if that's good, then the love is good. Instead of seeing, no, the love isn't good, the sex is good. You have to be able to see the difference. And if you really want more than sex, you have to make a decision to leave. Like, because you're only hurting yourself. And I've really learned that this year.
Exactly. Exactly. Good for you. And I think if we can accept as women that we just enjoy the sex, I think another condition, another way that we're conditioned in as straight women, especially, to always center men and why we're always on this constant quest for the one, we mm-hmm. have not allowed and we have not given women in mass, and women haven't given this themselves, the joy of simply saying, I enjoy sex.
Yes.
And I can enjoy sex and be able to separate the fact that this is a good sexual relationship from the fact that this may not be a good love for me. Now, that alone is complicated as well, because I think because the conditioning, people want to say it's biology. I don't think it's biology. I think it's centuries worth of conditioning where women yes. can't simply enjoy the sex without then getting emotionally connected, as we call it. I think it's just we're conditioned to think that we should be ashamed if you just like, no, I really like having sex with this dude and he's worthless any other way. But we can't allow ourselves permission to own that. Even when we are enjoying it and we really don't want to do the work of a real relationship, we're so conditioned to think that I can't just enjoy the sex for more than 3 months. That makes me a slut. So I'm going to then decide that I really want this other thing. Although you don't really want. Like the few times I have done that when I'm like, I like the sex. I like the chilling, eating chips, watching movies after the sex. But we're not that compatible. He's really not very bright. But I feel bad for admitting. Yes. Exactly. I don't feel bad for admitting that I believe that this dude is beneath me and he's only here for sex and I'm doing this for months and months and months, because a good girl don't do that. You know, that means I'm childish and immature. So I'm going to try to convince myself that I want more, bug the hell out of him about giving me more when I don't want to do the work for more. And I don't even like him that much, but I can't just admit I'm enjoying the sexual friendship, essentially, of this relationship. So I think some of that is us disempowering ourselves too, and not simply owning, I'm a sexual creature and I have the right to enjoy a sexual relationship and not force this other thing on it. I can then decide that I want to end it too, but not trying to force this other thing on it, or equating this good sex with it has to now be a good relationship. It don't have to be. You can keep enjoying the sex unless at or until you don't want to do that no more. But you don't have to, it doesn't have to evolve into something else if it's not meant to be. You can end it when you've decided, okay, we've had enough of this and I'm going to move on if I really do want something more meaningful.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I think that brings us into like boundaries and standards, right? And, you know, that's something that me and a lot of the guests on the show too, we really talk about boundaries and standards. Mm-hmm. In the book, you talk about this, that you have for men you date, which I find so important, because especially within dating, a lot of men assume you'll be happy with the fact that they happen to like you and may even love you or may have certain stellar qualities, which you mentioned in the book, since many real women really do desire to be in relationships. And you say in the book something I love, which is, most women would have died for men like them. I chose to keep breathing. And you also say, I am not married because I do not want to be. I'm not married because I have not seen any iteration of the institution that inspires me to want it, to work for it. I'm single because I am enough for me. That right there was so powerful. And I was just like, I need to put that, like, I have positive affirmations that I like to put on stuff. I need to put all this whole book, everything. Because it's really just empowering for someone like me who is single. And yes, I am seeking love, but I am enough.
You are.
Even if I am still seeking love, I am enough with who I am.
And I would say, first of all, I'm glad that you found that powerful, because this next book, well, I have two book ideas I'm working on, and one of them is more explicitly for women in your age bracket, where I literally say they lie to you, listen to auntie tell you all the lies you're going to be told. And I wanted to do that with No Thanks, but I didn't realize I wanted to do that with No Thanks until it had already been published. So I'm glad that you are feeling what I wanted young women your age to feel. Because here's the thing, and I've said this, I've somehow found myself, especially with after No Thanks was published, with a bunch of mentees in their 20s. And I've said to several of them on more than one occasion, this idea of not being enough for yourself, this idea of not being able to handle being with yourself, I don't understand how you expect to find someone else who can stand being with you when you yourself cannot stand being with you. Why? How are you going to put the responsibility of your loneliness on some other dude in his 20s? Have you met 20 men in their 20s before? Like, in general, you shouldn't be putting this
on.
In general, you shouldn't be putting the weight of your emotions on other people, period. But a young man in the United States of America in his 20s, you won't put him in charge of solving your loneliness? Girl, you may as well build your dream mansion on quicksand. That don't make no sense. So if you can't stand the mere thought of spending eternity with yourself, why are you getting on this hamster wheel of forever searching for the one, constantly exposing yourself to the emotional violence of a toxic dating culture, expecting this man to do what you can't do, spend time with you? like that ain't fair. And that's
crazy. That really makes sense. It makes sense. But we don't think of it like that.
That's essentially what you're saying to do. You're essentially saying, I'm lonely. Okay, I've had that feeling on more than a few occasions. I have felt lonely. So I'm lonely, and I'm going to need some man to take this feeling from me. You want to know the loneliest I felt? I had a man sleeping next to me who adored me, and I was incredibly lonely. You know what I realized? It ain't got nothing to do with him. Much like every other emotion Keturah Kendrick has felt, that shit is on me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He was a good enough dude. We weren't terribly compatible. The relationship had run its course, but he was still a good dude, and I appreciated the years we had spent together. But I had a lovely man, and I was lonely. So look at me. I'm back to dealing with myself again.
Yep.
So it just
yep. You can't run away from yourself.
You can. And you can still want love. Yes, having people in your life when you feel alone is important. We can't live on an island. But this idea that, first of all, other people are responsible for your emotions and helping you solve them is quite flawed. The expectation that if I do feel loneliness, then clearly it's the romantic partnership that's going to solve that. Like, that's your first go-to. So there's no other relationship in your life that you could be addressing that would deal with that. When was the last time you called your girlfriend? You spending all this time asking me, oh, how come he not calling me back? And how come he... When was the last time you wondered why your best friend ain't talked to you in a while? What's she going through that makes it hard for her to return your call? How much time... Because she going... Let me tell you. The way she talked you through that last breakup, she's going to talk you through this next one too.
Yep.
So how much time you spend thinking about... That last fight I got in with my mama was real ugly. She said some effed up stuff, but I also said some effed up stuff. How am I going to figure out? But you spending countless hours on the phone with your girlfriend trying to figure out this last conversation you had with a dude you know for 3 months. And you ready to really get yourself up and not trying to figure that out. But the woman who has birthed you and given you free rent. The friend who you've known since high school and who has been down for you, although she's a little cuckoo herself, but she's been down for you all this time. You're not spending that much time concerned about the condition of those relationships. Although these people will be there longer than that dude whose name you won't remember next year.
Mm-hmm. No, that is a fact. That is a fact. And the thing is also, like, I'm someone, I realize this, I don't know whether it was a week or so ago or something. I was talking to some people and I remember I said, you know what? I really want to live alone. I want to I love the idea of like having my own space, just my own space, me. But I want a partner too. And a lot of women, a lot of people will say, no, I want a partner. I want to be up on him. I want to sleep next to him. I don't love sleeping next to a man. That's a fact, by the way. I love sleeping with a man, hey, but not sleeping next to a man because they move, they snore, they're annoying. So I love sleeping by myself. So there's that. And that's part of what I like love about your book is like the nuances of women. We don't always have to want a man to be our end all be all.
Oh, most definitely.
But we might still want a man, you know.
Most definitely. I think if you are a person, if unless you identify as aromantic, because there is a segment of the population who doesn't see the need for romance, whether they are queer or not, that part of themselves, they just don't feel. Because I think, again, there's nuance and there are many different ways of being as a human being. Unless you identify as aromantic, it is perfectly natural for you to crave romantic partnership. But what I love about the year of our Lord 2022 is that we're at a place where we're having more conversations about what does that look like? Because again, since I was a teenager and started to, especially when I was in college, I didn't start dating until I was in college.
Yeah, me too.
When I started dating, my ideal relationship has always been to have a boo who lives in close proximity to me.
Yeah.
And I waited, much like I said, starting up, I waited for years to quote unquote grow up and be mature, to want to cohabitate, to want to split bills, to want to, as they say, share my life. Because the only way you can share your life is watching somebody shit, right? In the bathroom. That's the only way to share life. So I waited for a long time to grow up and want that. And I think at this age, I'm quite clear. If you want to cohabitate, because again, there is financial benefits to that. I mean, I live in New York City.
Yes.
Rent starting at $1,500 now, mm-hmm. if you're lucky. So it is not an awful system to have to only have to pay one bill and have help on that housing bill, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm at a point now where I'm like, again, there are many ways to love. There are many ways to be in a mm-hmm. committed relationship. And unfortunately, there are many people who haven't caught up to that yet. Because I do think a lot of people who say, oh, something must be wrong with you, you're not in a real relationship, they have never questioned why they believe a real relationship means eventually there's cohabitation, eventually there is the being up on them all the time, always putting them first and your friends take a second seat. Why they believe that is the markers of a real relationship. They've never questioned that. So they think they're choosing it. But if you ain't never questioned it and intentionally chose it, are you really choosing it?
Yeah. And I just think it's important to like know what it's like to just be alone too and just have your own space if you have the money, because New York is another story.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a reality.
Yeah. But even having roommates, I mean, you could just have roommates. It don't have to be your man. You could have like roommates. And so it's your place with a roommate.
Exactly.
And then your man comes over when you want him to come and you go to his place. I like that. Like it's freedom for both of you. And that's really important to have your mm-hmm. own identities, because if things don't work out, every couple has a rough patch.
Most definitely.
You're not going to know who you are. And that's a really sad place to be. And we all experience that. Maybe not you, but like a lot of women like me have known that of like, oh my God, what am I going to do tomorrow? You know what I mean? Like that fearful feeling. It's really hard. And we do the work now, right? So by the time I'm in my 40s and 50s, I'm not going to be broken by whatever could happen.
Exactly.
And also we talk about what I hate too is a lot of women will be like, you know, if you really are young like me and you want children, but you don't want children right now, but you know you want children at some point. A lot of it is like, well, when are you going to have kids? Because, you know, your eggs are not going to, you know, be fresh forever. Like there is that timeline. And it's like my life doesn't need to be on your timeline. It's on my own. But then they bring biology into it.
I'm careful in choosing my words in this part of the conversation, because I'm aware I don't know what it feels like to crave children, to really feel like you were put on this earth to be a mother. I don't know what that feels like, so I cannot speak to that very specific experience. I can, however, say when people say that to women, well, what if you might not be able to have children? Why is the assumption that that would be a big deal if she doesn't? Like, have you asked yourself why you feel you need to have children? Again, I don't want to speak for an experience that I cannot identify with, and that is wanting to have children. But I really do feel like the whole, but you won't have children is the equivalent to, but you'll never get married.
Yeah.
But you'll never have, like, so mm-hmm. fucking what? Why is the assumption that not having these things will leave me curled up in a ball in a fetal position when I'm 40? It could. It could not. And better yet, have you asked the women who have children, would they do that shit again? Given what they know.
Mm.
Because you can Google, I regret having children, and get yourself ready. Get your prayer list ready to pray for some of these people's children who regret it. The ones who are trying to still be good human beings and raise their children as best they could because the children has to come here. But they clear. I was hoodwinked. And another thing about the time period we're living in is there are mothers who are coming forward. Now, if you Google this, there are very thoughtful, nuanced pieces where women say, I don't regret my children's presence. I am glad they are walking this earth. However, I regret being a mother.
Mm.
Or had I known what this is like and all the things I'm supposed to feel, I don't. I probably would not do it again. And I'm glad that they're here. That those are two different statements that can coexist. I'm glad my children exist. And I'm also clear I shouldn't have done this. And I probably wouldn't do it again. There are nuanced discussions about that happening, especially in the world of the internet and those social media platforms. There are nuanced conversations. Eventually, Ava DuVernay would have enough courage to actually write this shit and do some meaningful media on this. But I think many of the women like Ava who are child free by choice, who may feel that they regret motherhood and have the power to like create programming around it, I think they knew they would get slaughtered in the press, especially in the Black community, for talking about that. So they don't want to do it, right? They'll do everything else except deal with this, because they know that we ain't ready for the dominant, like,
we're not ready.
HBO Hulu series on this. So we're gonna keep having Twitter conversations about it. The Atlantic will publish a couple of articles. The Atlantic will publish some essays every now and again. The New York Times might cover it kind of sort of well. But if we don't know, we're going to keep doing our, what's that show where the woman goes to Sicily and she meets the love of her life and she nursed him through cancer. We're going to keep doing that, which is a lovely story.
From scratch. That was the name of it.
We're going to keep doing that. Yeah, from scratch. We're going to keep doing From Scratch, which I enjoyed the series. It's lovely. We're going to keep doing for that from scratch. And we'll have Twitter conversations about all that woman had to give up to do that.
All that she gave up. Yeah. And there's also, you know, Ava DuVernay, Tracee Ellis Ross. I know Tracee Ellis Ross has really spoken about this, about how she's in her 40s. I believe she's in her 40s. And she's like, I'm not married. I don't have children. And she actually has been like the only one.
Mm-hmm. She should be 50 at this point. I think she's in her 50s.
Mm-hmm. She's spoken up about the decision she made and just where she's in. And I think she said, like, I would have liked to be partnered. Like, it's not like these women, a lot of them don't want to. It just hasn't happened for them. And they didn't want to put up with the crap that was out there. So, yeah, I just wanted to say, to piggyback on what you were saying, too. And there's also, like, different ways women can have children. There's adoption. Why don't we talk about that? Why does it always have to be, oh, you can't give birth? There's adoption. There's ways for, you know, people who struggle with infertility. There's things that they can do. Like, it's not all is lost. And I think when you don't do it the traditional way, they look down at you. And I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, there is a lot of social cred for doing what you're supposed to do. It's called convention and tradition for a reason. It comes with a whole lot of social capital, which is why we call it convention and tradition. So when you don't do it conventionally or traditionally, you lose that social capital. And I'm glad we're at a point at the very beginning of the beginning stages of having this conversation and creating a world where women sincerely, like really legitimately, make the choice to marry and have children, as opposed to this is convention and I'm going to follow it. And that doesn't mean that simply because it's convention, I'm going to follow it, that they don't enjoy it or find value in it. But when you have 75% of the world, both through your interpersonal relationships, media, dominant culture, cultural expectation, you have 75% of the world telling you that you ain't a real woman, whether it's direct or indirect, unless you do these things, you can't tell me that most people who are taking that route have chosen it. When we start seeing more variety in how we are presenting womanhood and adulthood, and women still make these choices, then I'll be convinced it's natural. And the data already back up I'm right, because because as women have gained more ownership of themselves, the birth and marriage rates have dropped for that very specific reason.
Wow.
Because like Tracee Ellis Ross has said, I mean, I'm not anti-partnership. You mean I'm a heterosexual woman. And if I meet a man who I'm compatible with and we see the world the same way and it works out, sure, why not? And if that manages to happen, if it manages to be a relationship that lasts a lifetime, lovely. If it only lasts 2 years, lovely too. Essentially what she's saying is this is no longer the center of a woman's life. The search for the constant work to maintain. Women can choose to do that. We also can choose to go to the courthouse and sign another document, right? we can choose to do that now.
Yes. Yeah, but this has been like such a great discussion. Thank you for coming. You got to come back because these are some gems here.
Oh, you are more than welcome. Thank you for having me. And I would love to come back at any time you and your listeners would have me. But I've enjoyed the conversation. I'm glad you found it fulfilling.
And that's all for this week. Thank you for listening to Saucy But Sweet with Allie McPherson.